Case number 3, and that is 10-1858 Guzman versus the City of Chicago. Hi, Mr. Chekowiak, I'm sorry. You would think that a Latvian would know how to pronounce that name, wouldn't you?
I have trouble sometimes myself, so go back and forth in English.
That's kind. Okay.
May it please the court, on behalf of Ms. Guzman, I'm here to argue that there were mistakes made by the trial court in instructing the jury in this case. Our argument is that principally by instructing the jury based on Seventh Circuit Pattern 702, it was an incorrect statement of law which invited the jury to limit the damages that were only caused by evidence at the trial based on testimony of these two defendants. And the key factual issue here is that at the trial, there was some dispute about who detained or held Ms. Guzman after the entry. Ms. Guzman has said it was Officer Rojas. Officer Rojas denied that. And as a trial attorney, I can say that Officer Rojas didn't come across as a particularly mean person or seemed very likable. And the jury may have concluded that in that moment when the officers entered, Ms. Guzman was so shocked and frightened, she really didn't get a good look at who was holding her down or detaining her or whatever happened for the first couple of minutes. So based on that instruction at issue, for example, which said that you cannot hold these defendants liable for what other officers did, the jury may have said, well, we don't think it was Rojas, it was some other officer. That officer is not a defendant, and we're not going to hold these defendants liable for what other officers did. The jury may also have thought that it was that initial entry and holding her down which caused the contractions and the most stress, which caused her to go to the hospital. Based on the instructions that were given to the jury, they could have concluded that, well, it wasn't these officers who caused that, therefore we're going to find a nominal damages award is appropriate.
Now, let me ask you, since you were talking about the damages issue, why didn't you ask for damages for time lost as a result of the seizure?
For time lost?
Yeah.
Typically, in cases like this that I've tried, that's intertwined with asking for damages for emotional distress. And based on the Seventh Circuit pattern instruction on damages in cases like this, that's the damages award for the emotional distress.
So you wouldn't specifically spell it out. You're saying you would just rely on that instruction rather than spelling that out.
Well,
you can't. I mean, that instruction doesn't prevent you from spelling it out.
Correct, it doesn't. But in this case, we argue that the time that she was being held was caused emotional distress, as she testified to. And for that time, for the distress that she suffered, it's our position that was a compensable injury. And on the other issue of nominal damages, I cite several cases where courts have held that a nominal damages instruction should not be given where there's a compensable injury. And I know this court has held, for example, in some excessive force cases where the excessive force can be tied to reasonable force and can be tied to unreasonable force, a nominal damage instruction could be given. But here, there was already a finding of liability. So given the fact that there were damages, including emotional distress, including medical bills, it's our position that a nominal damage instruction should not have been given. And I do cite, I realize they're only persuasive authority, but I do cite some cases at the end of the reply brief, and I could just highlight a few of those on this issue. The Anderson versus Zammer case, 402 Illap 3rd 362, In that case, the plaintiff was in a car accident, did not seek immediate medical attention, later in the day went to a hospital because she had a headache. And in that case, the court held that the medical bills should have been, all of should have been recovered in the damages portion. It did not matter that she did not seek immediate medical attention. It wasn't even an issue. And the fact that a headache could be caused by a number of things, once again, no reasonable jury could find that the medical bills were not tied to the car accident. And I think the same analysis applies to this case. Similarly, in Reagan versus Visa, 65 Illap 350, in that case, another car accident case, the plaintiff went to the hospital several weeks later for a backache. Once again, a backache can be tied to a number of things, a mattress, for example, or lifting something. But in that case, the court held that an award below the medical bills was inadequate, and a new trial on damages should be held. Based on those principles, it's our position that a nominal damage instruction should not have been given because it would be clearly inadequate. Thank you. I would like to reserve any rebuttal time. Thank you.
Hi, Ms. Solomon. How are you?
May it please the court. The jury's damages verdict in this case should be affirmed. Ms. Guzman does not make a proper argument that the award was irrational or that it lacks evidence to support it, and that issue is foreclosed in any event by her failure to move below under Rule 50. Nor is a new trial required for either of the instructions she challenges. The first instruction she challenges told the jury that she must prove that Sergeant Bonstetter and Officer Rojas were personally involved in the conduct that she complains about, and they could not hold defendants liable for what other employees did or didn't do.
But isn't it true, Ms. Solomon, that the only question for trial was the extent of her damages, if any?
Correct, Your Honor, and that is why we agree.
Where does that instruction have any place in that context?
We agree that instruction was an abuse of discretion in this case, and we have not defended giving it in our brief. But there are legion cases that even when an instruction should not have been given in the particular case, a new trial is not required unless the instruction was prejudicial in light of all the instructions, the evidence, and the arguments by counsel.
Would you agree that the city's attorney gave some emphasis to this instruction in his closing argument?
The instruction was mentioned once in the closing argument. Ms. Guzman does not complain about that in her opening brief. And, in fact, her entire argument on both of the instructions is seriously deficient. She never addresses any of the other instructions. She never addresses any of the evidence. And it is clear, as I indicated, that even an erroneous instruction, which we do agree this one was an abuse of discretion in this case, nonetheless, even where an erroneous instruction is given in the particular case, that is not standing alone ground for a new trial. Ms. Guzman.
Well, when we look at the impact, though, of that instruction, and, you know, as counsel pointed out, it wasn't entirely clear that it was just those two individuals that were involved in her being harmed. And putting that whole liability issue back in the game, the jury could have been hung up on that. And when you look at what the damages award was, because basically she admitted she suffered emotional, the defendant pretty much admitted there was some emotional harm she suffered in that the officers testified she was scared, she was crying, she was worried about her baby. All these things, when you look at it in the context of this liability instruction, are problematic.
Well, we do disagree with that, Your Honor, and we focus primarily. We start with the actual argument that Ms. Guzman has made in this court. She has one sentence that might conceivably be addressed to the issue of prejudice in her opening brief. And in that sentence, she says that this instruction invited juror confusion because, as Your Honor has highlighted, there were multiple officers involved. There's one more sentence in her reply brief, although it makes a different argument, and that is that the jury could have believed her story that she was forced to the ground, but thought that someone other than the defendants did it. But these objections, read under the standard that actually applies for review of an erroneous instruction, not the standard that Ms. Guzman presents, but the standard that actually applies, which is whether the jury would have understood, based on everything that happened at trial, that the instruction did not preclude an award of compensatory damages against the defendants. And the jury in this case was told repeatedly that liability, the defendant's liability, had already been determined and that they were liable. It was one of the first things Judge Manning told the jury. And this resurfaced repeatedly during the examination of the witnesses. And tellingly, it is in the instruction immediately before the one Ms. Guzman complains about and immediately after. And so glaring is her failure to present a proper argument in this court on that that she does not even include all of the instructions in the appendix to her brief. We have provided them in our appendix, and I urge the court to review the instruction on page SA-16 and on SA-18. And both of these told the jury that the defendants were liable, that the only issue that the search was unlawful, that the only issue was damages, and that it should determine those damages that were the direct result of the defendant's unconstitutional conduct, what amount of money will reasonably and fairly compensate the plaintiff for those damages. The instruction immediately after repeated that the jury must determine the amount of money that will fairly compensate the plaintiff for the injuries that she sustained. At worst, we submit that the personal responsibility instruction, the one bracketed by the two Ms. Guzman does not discuss, was superfluous because it was undisputed in this case that Sergeant Bonstetter was the leader of the operation and it was Officer Rojas who Ms. Guzman testified ordered her to lie on the floor and then held her down. Now, counsel said in his opening argument that there was a dispute at trial about who held her down. That is not correct. There was not a shred of evidence, not even Ms. Guzman's testimony. She never said she was confused. She never said she did not get a good look. She said unequivocally it was Officer Rojas. If he didn't do it, then nobody did. And that was the issue in front of the jury, whether it happened, not who did it. And all told, on this record, superfluous instructions, which this one was, relating to no evidence in front of the jury, are presumed to be harmless. The verdict form did not allow for apportionment of damages, and read as a whole on the basis of the entire trial record, these instructions adequately informed the jury that it was required to award damages for anything Ms. Guzman proved. Accordingly, we think there was no confusion, but only the jury's determination that Ms. Guzman failed to prove her damages. Turning to the second instruction that Ms. Guzman challenges, the reference to nominal damages. Now, this was not a standalone instruction. It was the last line of the instruction on compensatory damages. And the court will find that on page SA18, page 18 of our supplemental appendix. Such an instruction was not an abuse of discretion in this case. Again, counsel does not even address that issue. He reviews it only in the abstract, not in light of the other instructions and not in light of the evidence. But such an instruction is inappropriate only where there is no evidence to support the defendant's argument that there was no provable injury. And we cite the Briggs against Marshall case for that. It is a Fourth Amendment case, as this one is. And in this case, although liability was determined, as Your Honor has noted, that is a different issue. The plaintiff must prove not only that she was injured, not only that the defendants are liable, but that she was injured and the extent of her injuries. And in this case, that issue was hotly disputed. The defendants never admitted the extent, if any, of Ms. Guzman's injury. And certainly that they did not admit that the search was a but-for cause of her trip to the hospital. Ms. Guzman did not move for a directed verdict on that issue either. So obviously the evidence was in conflict. Her counsel admitted as much in closing argument. That
there was no evidence that she had any contractions before the search. That wasn't disputed, was it?
There was no evidence that she had previously had contractions. But, of course, the jury can use its common sense that contractions will begin to occur at some point in a pregnancy. She did, at her deposition, state that she had the same kind of pain a week later. At trial, she attempted to testify that it was a different pain. So she was impeached on that. But regardless, the contractions could have had multiple causes. That was in the medical evidence, multiple causes. But the medical evidence all comes down to this, because at trial, Ms. Guzman said it had one cause, being forced to the floor and being held there by Officer Rojas, who directed her to the floor as part of the entry team, and held his hand on her back. The jury could find that that story was entirely untrue. Officer Rojas was not on the entry team. The point is not whether the jury's verdict is rational on this, because, again, as I indicated at the outset, that issue is not in front of the court. The adequacy of the damages verdict is not before this court. It is not adequately presented in the briefs. There's one sentence and a footnote, and when we addressed it in our brief, the reply brief scoffs at us for doing that. It was not moved below either under Rule 50. And so the adequacy is not here. What is here on the nominal damages instruction is simply whether it was an abuse of discretion by the district court to give that instruction. And as I indicated, the cases from this court are very clear that it is an abuse of discretion only when there is no evidence to support the defendant's argument that there was no provable injury. Now, as I say, I have dispensed, I think, with the medical evidence. There was ample, the medical expenses. There was ample evidence at trial that those were not caused by the defendants. On emotional distress, given that Ms. Guzman was so thoroughly impeached at trial and that the jury could easily have concluded that her story was entirely exaggerated, that she could not keep a straight story, perhaps even that she was lying, the district court's discretion to give the nominal damages instruction comes down to this: whether the officer's testimony, as Judge Williams indicates, the officers agreed Ms. Guzman was scared and crying. But that shows, at most, the fact of her injury. And again, the cases are very clear that the fact of injury is not enough to exclude the possibility of nominal damages. To the contrary, where the fact but not the extent and the value of damages is proved, nominal damages may be the only thing the plaintiff can recover. And that comes directly from the Supreme Court's cases in Carey and in the Memphis case. We don't want to be heard to argue that this was a pleasant experience for Ms. Guzman, but again, as I say, the adequacy of the jury's award is not in front of the court. What is in front of the court is whether, on this issue, the nominal damages issue, is whether the officer's testimony that Ms. Guzman was upset for a while during the search deprived the district court of the discretion to instruct on nominal damages, and we submit that it did not. This is an easier case than de novo review of a directed verdict or a JNOV on damages. That was not the ruling below. That's not the ruling challenged here. The ruling challenged is simply whether to include, along with a lengthy instruction on compensatory damages. It was part of the same instructions. The court will see that on page 18 of our supplemental appendix. There is one sentence on nominal damages, and it accurately told the jury that if it found that Ms. Guzman failed to prove any damages that were the direct result of the defendant's conduct, must award the plaintiff $1. And I should emphasize, in connection with that, plaintiff not only did not challenge the language direct result, but actually asked for that in connection with another instruction. The defendant's instruction had used the words proximate cause, and the plaintiff had requested that that be changed to direct result. So direct result of the defendant's conduct was given consistently on page 16 and on page 18 as well. So there's no objection to that. The defendants did not and could not prove the plaintiff's claim for damages. The officer's testimony provided no more than abstract value, which Carey and Memphis tell us is not enough. substantive rights have no inherent, the deprivation of substantive rights has no inherent value, but it must be proven. And compensatory damages may not be awarded just to vindicate the right, as the court explained at length in the Memphis case. That an award of damages on that basis is arbitrary and unwieldy. So on this point, our submission is simply that because a rational jury could have found that Ms. Guzman failed to prove the extent and the value of her injury, if any, caused by the defendants, the district court did not abuse its discretion in including an instruction on nominal damages. For both of these reasons, we ask that the verdict be affirmed. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ms. Sullivan. How many minutes?
10.
What happened to Ms. Guzman when this search warrant was executed, which should not have been executed, was she was in her bed in the early morning without clothes on, talking on the phone, an innocent 18-year-old girl who was 8 months pregnant. Officer Bonsetter was the leader of the search team. He broke in through the front door, and at that time, about 8, 9, or 10 officers entered with their guns drawn. She was startled. She was frightened. The jury was told that Officer Bonsetter was not responsible for the trauma she may have experienced from the other officers. That was an incorrect statement of law. Whatever caused those contractions, whether the officer Bonson or Rojas or anyone else or any of the other 20 officers who entered Ms. Guzman's apartment with their guns drawn and searched it, these defendants were liable under principles of joint and several liability. In a district court, the defendants now say, well, we admit this instruction should not have applied. In a district court, they adamantly argued this instruction must be given. It's indisputable that joint and several liability applies in this case. In a district court, the defendant said there is no joint and several liability in 1983 cases. The jury was instructed that the damage award in this case could only be based on what Officer Bonsetter and Ross are proven to have done and not based on anything that the other 20 or so police officers did. It's reasonable to think that that's the reason the verdict is what it is. And counsel can argue there was no argument about prejudice by the plaintiff, but the whole brief is that exact argument. The plaintiff was prejudiced by this instruction, which was an incorrect statement of law, and that explains the result. On nominal damages, as I reference in the opening argument, given the case law about an inadequate award of damages, including the cases I cited where later the day the person went to the hospital for a headache, weeks later a person went to the hospital for a backache, in those cases the court said an award of damages below the medical expenses is inadequate. That rationale, that applies here. The medical expenses in this case were over $5,000. There's no other explanation for those medical expenses other than the fact that Ms. Guzman went to the hospital right after this incident, and she didn't check herself into the hospital. The doctor ordered her to be monitored overnight and to stay in the hospital to be monitored for contractions, as one would expect. No reasonable jury could find there's any other explanation for her going to the hospital but for this event, and all of those medical expenses, at a minimum, have to be part of a damages award in this case. Unless there are further questions, thank you so very much, Your Honors.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks to both parties. The case will be taken under advisement.